On a blurred, deep blue screen, two circles of steel rotate, a dazzling light reflected off the shining metal. They're held in place by a crescent of steel. Revolution Studios. The screen fades to black. A flickering flame burns through it, forming letters of gold. In the coldest regions of space, the monstrous entities Ogdru-Jahad, the seven gods of chaos, slumber in their crystal prison, waiting to reclaim Earth and burn the heavens. De Vermis Mysteries, page 87.
What is it that makes a man a man? Is it his origins, the way things start? Or is it something else, something harder to describe? For me, it all began in 1944. Classified mission off the coast of Scotland. The Nazis were desperate. Combining science and black magic, they intended to upset the balance of the war. I was 28, already a paranormal advisor to President Roosevelt. I could never have suspected that what would transpire that night would not only affect the course of history, but change my life forever.
October 9th, 1944, Scotland. Night, rain teams down outside a large tunnel.
Come on, come on, come on!
Soldiers run through it. A giant wooden crucifix is pelted by rain. A young bespectacled man stands near it.
Your men! They'll need these!
He holds up rosary beads.
Are you a Catholic?
Yes, among other things. But that's hardly the point.
Well, you're gonna need one of these.
A gun.
I abhor the use of violence. Thank you. I wouldn't want you to think me mad, Sergeant Whitman.
No, 3 days too late for that, Professor Froome. All right, you guys, let's move!
The bespectacled Froome stares up at the crucifix.
This way, left side! Come on, man, let's get the lead out!
We're close!
You're wasting our time. There's nothing on this island but sheep and rocks!
Ruins, not rocks.
Hold it right here, guys!
The remains of Trondheim Abbey, built on an intersection of ley lines, the boundaries between our world and the others.
What a load of crap! Hell, a week ago, I never even heard the word paranormal.
Paranormal.
Move it!
Whitman's men move stealthily forward.
Hold on.
Come on!
The rain falling in stair rods around them, they come to a stop behind a ruined wall. Whitman tilts back his helmet.
Sweet Jesus.
The towering, ghostly ruins of Trondheim Abbey stand just ahead of them. Nazi soldiers swarm the area. Brooms beside Whitman.
They must be here for the sheep.
Amongst the bustle around the ruins, a Nazi officer in full uniform observes, his hands behind his back. His hat is pulled down over a featureless gas mask, which encases his entire face. Whitman looks at him through binoculars.
A freak in the gas mask.
Karl Rupert Cronin. Hitler's top assassin and head of the Thule Occult Society.
Cronin turns. Broom and Whitman duck down.
If he's here, this is worse than I thought.
Whitman looks troubled. Cronin watches as some large scientific equipment the Nazis have set up whirs into life. A large upright circular device unfolds itself and begins to rotate. Cronin waves to a soldier, and several spotlights are turned on. A blonde female SS officer stands under an umbrella with a large bearded man who has a shaven head and wears a high-collared cloak.
No matter what happens tonight, this book will guide you back to me. Grant you everlasting life, youth, and the power to serve me.
She looks adoringly at him.
Ilsa! Grigori! It's time!
An SS general wearing dark glasses and a leather trench coat holds up a pocket watch. Ilsa and Grigori separate from a kiss and follow the general up to the top of some stone steps.
5 years of research and construction, Grigori! 5 years! The Führer doesn't look kindly on failure.
There will be no failure, General. I promised Herr Hitler a miracle.
He pushes Ilsa's umbrella aside.
I'll deliver one.
The General goes. Cronin takes a heavy mechanical glove with a cable attached out of a box and fits it onto Grigori's right hand.
What I will do tonight can never be undone. I will open a portal and awaken the Ogdru-Jahad. The seven gods of chaos. Our enemies will be destroyed. And from the ashes, a new Eden will arise.
The glove is attached to the circular device by the cable. Grigori flicks a switch on the glove and a band around its wrist begins to rotate.
Ragnarok! Anum! Anum!
Lightning-like pulses of energy flow from Grigori and the glove and strike the large rotating circular device, which spins faster and faster, then suddenly illuminates with a bright flash and becomes a circular portal, sucking light into it. A spotlight is drawn into the portal, its electric flex playing out behind it. The spotlight emerges on the far side of the portal and floats through space. It bumps into a large multi-sided object. Its beams illuminate several large amber eyes within the object, one of which blinks. Back at the Abbey, a Nazi scientist loads a brass cylinder into a piece of equipment. A GI, Macklin, looks over the wall he and the other Americans are hiding behind and takes some photographs. He's pulled back behind the wall.
Get down!
The Nazi scientist notices the movement.
I was taking a picture.
You do that again, I'll carve you a new one.
Yes, sir. The portal is open. Do you understand? We have to stop them.
The Nazi scientist walks slowly towards the wall. Whitman pulls the pins out of two grenades. He lobs them over the wall, and they land by the scientist.
Granate! Granate!
The explosion throws the scientist into the portal, and he disintegrates. A piece of old masonry collapses and falls on another scientist, crushing him. Cronin draws his Luger as the GIs attack and guns down several of them. He hits Boone in the leg. Boone falls to the floor. The Americans have the advantage of surprise and press home their attack. Cronin guns down more of them until he runs out of ammunition. He throws his gun down and extends his arms. A large vicious blade springs from each of his coat sleeves and he hacks into two GIs with them. Broom crawls towards a downed GI who has grenades on his belt. Having dispatched the two GIs, Cronin turns his attention to Broom and stalks towards him. He raises his blades and is about to strike when Whitman appears and shoots Cronin three times. The bullets bounce off him. Broom lobs a grenade towards the portal. Cronin retracts his blades and hurries over to the portal. He reaches out to retrieve the grenade but can't quite reach it. Whitman dives on top of Broom and the grenade explodes. The blast throws Cronin backwards and he lands against a wall. As the portal blows up, a metal stake is hurled out of the portal and it runs Cronin through, pinning him to the wall. Ilsa takes the book Grigori gave her and slinks off for cover. Grigori, meanwhile, begins to melt. Blobs of his flesh are pulled away and hurtled into the portal. He's then lifted off his feet and pulled after them. He hangs in the remains of the portal for a moment and is then sucked into it. The impaled Cronin's head slumps forward limply. Whitman helps Boone to his feet.
It's almost over.
No, it's not.
They look at the remains of the portal.
The portal's been open for too long. Something may have come through. Have your men search the area thoroughly.
Whitman nods to Macklin. As the GIs begin their search, Macklin helps Broom across the courtyard. They see Cronin has vanished off the metal stake which had impaled him.
He's gone. For now.
Broom stares fixedly at the stake.
You said something came through. From where?
Broom doesn't react. In the Abbey, Macklin looks at a carved relief showing demons stoking a fire beneath a cauldron of lost souls. Broom ties a tourniquet around his injured leg. Tubby Macklin turns back to him.
Do you really, really believe in hell?
Broom looks up at Macklin.
There is a place, a dark place, where ancient evil slumbers and waits to return. Grigori gave us a glass tonight.
Grigori? That's Russian, right?
Grigori Efimovich Rasputin.
Rasputin?
occult advisor to the Romanovs. In 1916, at a dinner in his honor, he was poisoned, shot, stabbed, clubbed, castrated, and finally drowned. And yet, we saw him here tonight.
Matlin spins round.
Professor Broom.
Broom hobbles over to Matlin by an old tomb.
Careful, be careful.
A carved figure lies on top of the tomb with a cat at its feet. Gun in one shaking hand, torch in the other, Matlin looks behind the tomb. His torchbeam falls on a fallen stone gargoyle and he relaxes. He turns back to Broom as a small, bright red demon with an oversized right forearm climbs up onto the tomb behind him. Matlin spins around and fires at the creature, which runs for cover.
What the hell is that? An ape?
No, it was red. Bright red. Lower your light. You're scaring it.
What is he shooting at?
A red ape!
No, it's not an ape.
It's got a big stone in its hand.
I think that is its hand.
Look at the size of that whammer.
No, wait. Wait.
Whitman and the other GIs lower their guns. Broom pulls a Baby Ruth candy bar from his pocket and opens it. He takes a bite of the bar and then holds it out to the small horned demon, which reaches out for it. Broom pulls the candy away and then offers it again. The demon reaches out with its oversized hand, grabs it, and eats it. Broom opens another candy bar and turns to Whitman.
A blanket. Get me a blanket.
Whitman hands him a blanket, and he turns back to the demon.
Come on. Come on. It's safe. Jump down. Come on. Jump down.
The demon jumps down, and Broom catches it in the blanket.
It's a boy.
It's just a baby boy.
The troops gather round to look at it. Later, they have their photograph taken with it.
There we were, an unready father for an unwanted child. The boys gave him a name that very night. In retrospect, perhaps not the most fortunate. But nevertheless, a name we all came to use. We called him Hellboy.
Hellboy smiles up at Broom.
Look at the birdie!
The black and white picture of Hellboy with the troops floats away down a corridor of Gothic arches. Fiery runic symbols float past. Now a newspaper with the headline, New Evidence Found.
Congratulations on the origin of a
an aerial view over a maze. Another headline, the government denies he exists. Ridiculous, says FBI chief. It's a hoax. More of the maze. Further headlines, does he live near you? FBI made deal with Devil Boy. Half man, half devil. He came from out of the sky.
So what is it exactly that you say this agency?
I kid you not. It hunts monsters.
Another newspaper. Leaping lizards. Tailed man-beast spotted again. This time with a bloody photograph of Hellboy.
They claim, of course, that this creature works for the FBI as a monster hunter.
Now on fire, the maze drops away against a red, stormy sky to reveal it's the letters of the title, Hellboy. It recedes into the distance and fades away to black. Some snow-capped mountains. Bergau Pass, Moldavia, present day. Three people in mountaineering gear, two mountaineers and a guide, trudge up a narrow, snowy path between two sheer rock faces. They carry on down a slope and stop by some rocks. The guide turns to the other two.
What you seek is in there.
One of the mountaineers brushes some snow away from one of the rocks to reveal carved runic symbols. The mountaineer opens a book and checks them. The party proceeds onto a vast rocky cavern with hazy light filtering in through an aperture in its roof. A circular maze-like design has been carved into the cavern's floor. The mountaineers walk to the top of some steps leading down to the carved design.
This is a sacred place.
They walk down the first few steps and the guide puts his bag down. He takes his fur hat off and looks around.
Give me my gold. We should be here.
One of the mountaineers takes a gold ingot from his pocket and throws it onto the ground in front of the guide. The guide picks it up and sees a swastika is stamped into the ingot. The mountaineer then runs the guide through with a large blade, and the guide collapses onto the floor. The second mountaineer removes his hood and is revealed to be Ilsa. She hasn't aged from 1944. As the guide's blood trickles into the mace pattern on the floor, the other mountaineer removes his hood, revealing it to be the masked figure of Cronin. The guide's blood runs in the grooves of the mace design towards the center of the circle. Cronin and Ilsa watch as the blood fills the circle at the center of the design. Suddenly, the naked figure of a bald-headed man rises up out of the blood. Ilsa and Cronin walk towards him. It's Grigori. The gore-soaked Grigori opens his eyes. Two white-coated doctors look at x-rays of a patient at the Lexington Oncology Center, New York.
Have you told him yet?
No.
We should.
In the next room, a very much older broom with white hair and beard gets dressed and eavesdrops on the doctor's conversation. He goes outside where a car is waiting for him. On a TV...
Tom Banning has been head of special operations at the FBI, and he joins Pat in the studio tonight to go over the latest Hellboy sighting.
There, that's the tail, and these are the horns.
I have a question. Why is it in these pictures, the pictures of aliens, UFO, the Yeti, Hellboy, why is it they're always out of focus?
Why don't you tell us about the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense?
I want to tell you, I want to tell the American public one thing. Now, this Bureau for the...
Paranormal Research and Defense.
Manning points into the camera.
There is no such thing.
An imposing white Art Deco-style building with a flaming torch burning on a plinth in front of it. Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defense, Newark, New Jersey. A young man wearing an old-fashioned style motorcycle helmet and goggles pulls up outside the Bureau's front gates on a scooter.
Waste Management Services?
What is it?
John Myers, FBI. Transfer from Quantico.
Let's get the birdie, Doc.
The intercom panel slides open and a sophisticated retinal scanner shoots out. On a monitor, the young man is confirmed as Agent John Myers, and the front gates swing open for him. He drives inside. John walks into a large marble-tiled hall and stops on a tile with a sword and a hand logo on it.
Hello, I'm John.
You are late. That's what you are. 5 minutes.
Yes, I know. I'm going to...
Section 51. I know. Watch your hands and elbows.
Pardon?
Watch your hands and elbows.
The security guard watches as the tile John is standing on drops through the floor. John finds himself descending into a vast subterranean complex of many levels, each with walkways and rooms. The platform descends to level 51 and comes to a halt. Clean-cut John walks towards some large, ornately carved metal doors and goes through them. He emerges into a large room furnished like a gentleman's club.
Hello?
A very large fish tank is on his right as he walks into the room. A fire crackles in a grate at the far end.
Turn the pages, please, if you don't mind.
John is startled as a gill man appears in the fish tank.
Please. The pages.
These? You're reading these?
4 books at once, every day. As long as I'm there to turn the pages. My name's Broom. Professor Trevor Broom.
Sir, I'm John.
Agent John T. Myers, Kansas City, 76. T stands for Thaddeus, mother's older brother. Scar on your chin happened when you were 10. You still wonder if it's ever going to fade away.
How did it...
He... Not it. Abraham Sapien. Discovered alive... in a secret chamber of St. Trinian's Foundling Hospital, Washington. His name was taken from this little inscription stuck to the side of his tank.
Ictio Sapiens, April 14, 1865.
The day that Abraham Lincoln died. Hence, Abe Sapien.
Oh.
Rotten eggs. Delicacy. Abe loves them.
How does he know so much about me?
Abe possesses a unique frontal lobe. Unique. That's a word you'll hear frequently around here.
Broom turns the book's pages.
Sir, where am I exactly?
As you entered the lobby, there was an inscription. In the absence of light, darkness prevails. There are things that go bump in the night, Agent Myers. Make no mistake about that. And we are the ones who bump back.
Broom keys in a combination to open a door.
1937, Hitler joins the Thule Society, a group of German aristocrats obsessed with the occult. 1938, he acquired the Spear of Longinus, which pierced the side of Christ. He who holds it becomes invincible. Hitler's power increases tenfold. 1943, President Roosevelt decides to fight back. The Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense is born. 1958, the occult wars finally come to an end with the death of Adolf Hitler.
1945, you mean? Hitler died in 45.
Broom smiles.
Did he now? Oh, Myers, this is Agent Clay. Take his lead. He'll make the introductions.
Broom hands John two Baby Ruth candy bars.
You're not coming?
I handpicked you from a roster of over 70 Academy graduates. Made me proud.
They're not speaking. Professor Broom had him grounded.
Grounded? Who's grounded?
Clay uses a high-tech key to unlock a heavy vault door with an immensely complicated blocking mechanism. A red flashing warning light comes on.
Okay. You saw the fish guy, right?
Oh, yeah. That was weird.
Yeah, right.
Clay heaves the vault door open to reveal a high-tech living room with a large number of cats eating on a table.
Well, come on in. Meet the rest of the family.
He gets fed six times a day. He's got a thing for cats. He'll be his nanny, his keeper, his best friend. He never goes out unsupervised.
Who?
Clay hands John a copy of a Hellboy comic.
I hate those comic books.
Startled, John looks up.
They never get the eyes right.
And sees a large, bright red man curling a dumbbell and puffing on a cigar.
Hellboy. He's real.
Yeah, 60 years old by our count. But he doesn't age like we do. Think reverse dog years. He's barely out of his 20s.
What's with the hair, Clay? Finally got them implants, huh?
it'll fill in.
Who's a squirt?
Agent Myers is your new liaison.
I don't want him. What, you got tired of me, Clay?
The candy. Give him the candy.
sir, I have these for you.
The candy bars.
Father's back? Mm-hmm. He's still angry?
Well, you did break out.
I wanted to see her. Nobody's business.
It is. You got yourself on TV again.
Myers, huh? You got a first name? Myers?
Try not to stare. He hates it when people stare. John Myers. Well, John will do.
Stare at what? His horns. He files them to fit in.
There are two flat horn stumps on the top of Hellboy's head. He walks over to John and eyes him up and down. John gawps at the stumps.
What you looking at, John?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Code red.
Hey, hey, hey.
Warning. Code red.
They're playing our song. Come on, champ. Let's go fight some monsters.
Hellboy prods John with his oversized hand. Night and a large crowd has gathered outside a building. A reporter.
We're here at the Mackin Library, where just hours ago an alarm was triggered. The NYPD has yet to issue a statement. We've got SWAT vans, paramedics, you name it. And now here comes a garbage truck. A large garbage truck.
Hellboy and Abe are inside the garbage truck, which John drives.
Look at them ugly suckers, Blue. One sheet of glass between them and us.
Story of my life.
Blue-skinned Abe adjusts a device.
Outside. I could be outside.
You mean outside with her?
Don't get psychic with me, fella.
Nothing psychic about it. You're easy.
How am I ever going to get a girl? I drive around in a garbage truck.
Liz left us, Red. Take the hint.
We don't take hints.
Hellboy holds up an oversized revolver called the Samaritan. The garbage truck pulls up outside the back door of the library. Clay, John, and some other agents wait as the back is opened.
Okay, guys, let's sync up our locators.
As Abe and Hellboy step out of the truck, everyone switches on their locators.
Seal the doors. Red and blue are coming in.
1900 hours, an alarm was tripped. A large entity, type 5, reported. Very aggressive. Six guards dead.
I thought we checked his place. Fakes, reproductions.
Apparently, not everything was fake.
Seeing Broom, Hellboy hides a cigar behind his back.
Father.
Broom eyes him sternly. Two agents open a metal crate full of weapons. Hellboy picks up a fast loader of bullets.
The entity is still in there. Video surveillance shows a 16th century statue was destroyed. St. Dionysius the Areopagite.
Who wards off demons.
Exactly. The statue, however, was hollow.
A reliquary.
A prison. The Vatican deemed its occupant dangerous enough to include it on the list of Avignon, of which, by the way, we hold a copy.
Perfect job for these babies.
Bullets.
Made them myself. Holy water, clove, leaves, silver shavings, white oak. The wakes.
Abe has been scanning a door with his webbed hand.
Behind this door, a dark entity. Evil, ancient, and hungry.
Oh, well.
Let me go in and say hi.
Samaritan revolver at the ready, Hellboy goes through the door. He nods to an agent who closes it behind him. Hellboy's red tail sticks out from the bottom of his heavy overcoat as he walks cautiously into the gallery. Many of the exhibits have been knocked over, and the bodies of the dead lie on the tiled floor. Hellboy kneels down, picks up a slime-coated boot and examines it. In the next room, Abe opens a wooden crate. John steps up to Abe.
You better hit the books, Brother Blue. We definitely need more info on this one.
Hey, no one goes with him? Jesus.
No. He likes it that way. The whole lonely hero thing.
Abe takes the book out of the crate. Hellboy sweeps the sights of his gun around the room. Seeing nothing, he relaxes. A large quantity of clear slime oozes from the ceiling in front of Hellboy, and he looks up. He lowers his gun and calls out.
Hey! Stinky!
A beast hangs from the ceiling.
Kitchen's closed. What you have? Six library guards raw, plus belts and boots. Man, you're gonna need some heavy fiber to move that out.
Red, I found something. This entity's name is Samael, the Desolate One. Son of Nergal, brother of...
Samael drops the body of a guard. Hellboy watches as the heavily muscled Samael jumps down from the ceiling. He has a long skull-like head with large fangs and dreadlock-like tentacles for hair.
Listen, Sammy, I'm not a very good shot, but the Samaritan here uses really big bullets.
Hellboy holds up the gun, and the green-skinned Samael turns to face him.
So what do you say we work this out in a nice, peaceful...
Samael runs off.
Oh, crap.
Samael lollops along, and Hellboy blasts away at him with a Samaritan. As Samael leaps into the air, one of the slugs hits him, blowing a large hole in his side, and he crashes to the ground. He lies twitching.
That's it for you, Sam.
Hellboy holsters the Samaritan and walks away.
Red, you need to hear the rest of the information.
Nah, he's taken care of.
No, listen to this. Samael, the Desolate One, Lord of the Shadows... Son of Nergal, Hound of Resurrection.
Hellboy stops and closes his eyes.
See, I don't like that.
But Hound of Resurrection? Harbinger of Pestilence? Seed of Destruction?
Cut to the end, will you? How do I kill it?
Doesn't say.
As Hellboy turns to walk back, Samael jumps up and hits him, throwing him back against the walls.
Let's go to the front side. Let's go, move.
Okay, I'm going around the back.
Ape-like Samael walks over to Hellboy, who raises his gun. Samael grabs Hellboy's gun arm and swings him about his head, slamming him repeatedly into the ground. He then pulls Hellboy upright and knocks him backwards. He flies through several glass cabinets and out of a window. Hellboy flies through the air and lands in a back alley, bouncing awkwardly off a garbage skin. He pulls himself up.
Child.
Grigori is nearby.
All grown up, I see.
That voice.
It was the first lullaby you ever heard, my son. I ushered you into this world.
I alone know your true calling, your true name.
Nameless.
As he picks up his gun, Grigori vanishes. Samael jumps down into the alley behind Hellboy, who turns round to shoot at him. But Samael extends his tongue and with it pulls Hellboy's gun arm aside, making him miss. Jorn emerges from round a corner and empties his gun's clip into Samael, who writhes in agony on the ground.
That thing!
What do you think you're doing?
What?
What do you think you're doing?
Helping you, I just...
Nobody helps me! My job!
Hellboy crouches down behind the garbage skip.
You want to help? Here.
Load this.
He hands the Samaritan and a cartridge to him.
It's a tracking bullet. Crap the pin.
John loads the shell, which glows green.
Jesus, what's that on your arm?
Oh, crap.
A hellish parasite is on the sleeve. Suddenly, Samael's long tongue punches through the side of the skip.
What the hell is that thing?
Let me go ask.
Hellboy chucks the parasite to John, who juggles it in his hands, then throws it aside. Samael climbs up onto a wall. Hellboy aims the Samaritan at him and chambers the tracking bullet. He fires it at Samael, hitting him in the abdomen and knocking him backwards off the wall. On the other side, Samael picks himself up and runs off towards two guys backing a truck up.
Keep coming. Good.
Samael jumps to a fire escape and back down again, then bounds on.
What are you, little...
Hey!
John watches as Hellboy leaps over the wall and dashes off in pursuit of Samael, who, dripping green tracking ink, now bounds over the roof of the guy's truck and lands in a Halloween funfair. He roars at the terrified people. John follows Hellboy over the wall.
Wait!
John races after Hellboy and gets on his radio.
We're heading towards civilians!
A guy in the back of the truck watches gobsmacked as Hellboy leaps onto the roof of the truck and jumps down onto the bonnet. John shouts to the guy in the truck as he runs past.
Hey, crazy costumes, huh? Trick or treat!
Samael crosses a busy road. Halfway across, he slams his fist into the ground and roars his displeasure as a car nearly hits him. Hellboy spots him run off up some steps on the far side of the road, then dashes between the lanes of traffic as he goes after him. John steps into the road and is struck a glancing blow by a passing car. He falls to the ground and sees a Jeep Grand Cherokee bearing down on him. Hellboy holds his big hand up to the Jeep driver in a stop gesture.
Oh. Red means stop!
Hellboy punches the hood of the car with his giant fist and it somersaults over his and John's heads and lands on its wheels on the far side of them. Hellboy looks down at John.
You all right?
Yeah.
Stay here.
Hellboy leaves John trembling in the road, clutching his injured arm. Hellboy runs up a back alley and finds a trail of luminous green blood on the ground. He scoops up a blob of it with his finger.
Sonny, you got a leak.
Hellboy drops down onto a subway track and finds Samael.
Waiting for me, Jeffries?
Samael turns and runs towards an oncoming subway train. Hellboy holsters his pistol, then sprints off after Samael, who leaps onto the front of the train and rips his way in through the front door. He snarls at the terrified driver and passengers, then runs down inside the train. Hellboy jumps onto the front of the train and clings to the step. His feet drag along the railway line. Samael runs to the rear of the train, rips the back door off and leaps outside. Himself up and waits. The driver bashes a fire extinguisher into Hellboy's face as he tries to dislodge him from the front of the train. Hellboy glares up at him irritably.
Hey! I'm on your side!
Sure.
He runs Hellboy again and he falls under the train. As he tries to sit up, the passing carriages repeatedly hit him on the head, raising sparks from his horn stumps. The train goes and Hellboy sits up on the track, his horn stumps glowing red hot. He touches one. He pulls himself up and straightens out his back. Samael is hanging from the roof of the tunnel above him. As he jumps down, Hellboy grabs him by the head and pulls his jaws open. He dislocates Samael's jaw, but Samael shakes his head and slots it back into place. He comes back at Hellboy, knocking him to the ground. Hellboy reaches out and grabs for the live rail on the track. He gets hold of the rail, sending a huge voltage through both him and Samael, who convulses as the current sweeps through his body. He begins to glow orange, then bursts into flames. Hellboy gets to his feet and looks down at the remains of Samael.
I'm fireproof.
Hellboy lights a cigar and shrugs his shoulders back, then gets on his radio to John, who's by a merry-go-round at the Halloween funfair.
Hey, Myers.
Yeah.
How's your arm?
Yeah, my arm's fine. Now, where are you?
I just fried Stinky. Listen, tell Father I'll be home.
But he shouldn't wait up.
No, wait.
Yeah, I gotta go with you.
Hey, Myers.
Hellboy unclips his earpiece.
Bye.
He switches off his locator and leaves the smoldering remains of Samael behind him.
Samael, die in peace and be reborn again and again.
A bright greenish light rises from Samael's corpse. It flares and divides into two, which hover above the body. At a Halloween fair, a man in costume sits beside a similarly clad young woman and puts a six-pack of beer down on the bench beside him. As the couple kiss, Hellboy's bright red tail snakes out from behind the bench, hooks up the six-pack, and snaffles it away. Later, Hellboy stands on a plinth outside the Bellamy Hospital, Bellamy's psychiatric hospital minimum security unit. Inside, patients shuffle down a long corridor. Amongst them, Liz, an introverted young brunette woman wrapped in a dark coat.
There's a big red man down there.
That's fine, darling. Santa's not here for another month.
Not Santa.
Who then?
Hearing the other patient's conversation, Liz looks round with interest. She goes outside, and her attention is caught by a hand sticking out from behind a tree, shaking beer tins.
I brought beer.
Oh, Red, your arm. You better get that looked at.
Hellboy steps out from behind the tree and shuffles awkwardly.
I wanted to see you.
Liz nods. Broom is with FBI Chief Manning at the museum.
Every time the media get to look at him, they come running to me. I'm running out of lies, Trevor.
Thought you liked being on television.
I do. So, how many escaped this year alone? 5.
Tom, he's our guest, not a prisoner.
Yeah, well, your guest happens to be 6'5", bright red, has a tail, and is government funded.
I know where to find him. I'll get him back.
Hey, fish stick. Don't touch anything.
I need to touch it. To see.
See what?
Past, future. Whatever this object holds.
Is he serious?
Don't worry about fingerprints. Never had any. Professor. They were here.
Broom goes over to Abe.
Who is here? Nixon? Houdini? Jimmy Hoffa? Who?
Show me, Abe. Show me what happened here.
Abe stands up, holding a long, shiny blade. Broom places his hand on the back of Abe's, and they look into the past. The broken relic in its cabinet becomes whole again. A security guard walks amongst the display cases with a torch and goes over to a panel on the wall of the gallery. The guard presses some buttons. As the guard continues on his rounds, Cronin crawls head first down a pillar. He wears his customary helmet with a black cat suit and metal breastplate. He has a dagger strapped to each arm and other blades attached to a belt around his waist. He performs a controlled backflip onto the ground. Cronin walks over to the display cabinet containing the relic, a statue of a bearded man. It's protected by a laser inside the cabinet. He touches the glass.
Cronin?
Ilsa appears.
Move!
She steps forward, brandishing a sledgehammer, then smashes the case with the hammer. Cronin steps forward and turns a dial on his breastplate, then takes a large blade from his belt and spins it deftly around, winding up a heavy blow. He strikes the statue, cleaving it diagonally in two. Ilsa steps forward and removes a glass jar from inside the statue, which appears to contain sand. The museum guards hurry into the gallery, guns at the ready.
We'll cover him from here!
Ilsa admires the metal-capped jar.
All right, don't move! Put that down! Put down the weapon!
Got some.
Drop the weapon!
Cronin twirls two blades.
On the ground!
Cronin turns to face the guards.
Last warning!
Two guards open fire and Cronin deflects their bullets with his blade, and they bounce back, killing the guards.
Take him out!
The other guards shoot Cronin repeatedly and he staggers back under the impact of the shots. When they cease firing, Cronin lunges forward, slashing at the guards, hitting them first in the chest and abdomen, and then hacking them in the legs, dropping them to the floor. As they lie in a circle around Cronin, Grigori appears and steps forward. Cronin bows his head to Grigori, who turns to Ilsa.
Now, ready the welcome, my love.
Ilsa opens the jar and tips its sand-like contents out onto the floor.
Salt, gathered from the tears of a thousand angels, restraining the essence of Samael, the hellhound. The seed of destruction.
Grigori exhales a cloud of bright greenish light into his hand and places it on the pile of salt. The salt begins to swirl around under its influence.
This, I can promise, Samael. For each one of you that falls, two shall arise.
Grigori steps back to Ilsa and Cronin. They watch as the salt weaves itself into a skeleton hand, which clutches at the air. Flesh begins to form on the hand. Grigori wears dark glasses, a long black coat and a purple scarf, which makes him resemble a Catholic priest. Now a pair of hind legs and a spine form out of the swirling salt. Samael's long skull materializes on the end of the spine, then flesh covers the skeleton to complete the demon. Back in the present, Abe and Broom separate. Broom hobbles away.
Professor,
I'm all right.
Broom winces with pain.
Professor.
Abe lays his hand on Broom's chest.
You are very sick.
I don't want Hellboy to know. 60 years ago, they tried to destroy the world. And they're back. In my lifetime, they're back. To finish the job.
Liz and Hellboy sit on a bench together outside the hospital.
We miss you at the Bureau. Abe's crazier every day. Father's still mad at me.
Liz smiles at Hellboy, who turns earnestly to her.
Come back, Liz. Come back.
No, HB. No, not this time.
She looks down and shakes her head.
I don't like it here. But I haven't had an episode in months.
She looks up at Hellboy, who sits thoughtfully.
You know what?
A blue flame envelops her left hand.
I'm learning to control it. I'm learning where it comes from. For the first time in my life, I'm not afraid.
Hellboy watches as she closes her fist and the blue fire around it dies away. A black sedan pulls up outside the gates.
Looks like your ride is here.
Hellboy glances over at the black sedan.
The nanny squad.
Broom gets out of the car.
Listen, HB, I've got a chance out here. So if you really care about me...
She drops her gaze and shakes her head.
You won't come back.
Disappointed, Hellboy hangs his head and she walks away. As he approaches the front door of the hospital, he gets to his feet and calls after her.
Yeah, I gotta go too. What's to do?
He stares down thoughtfully. As John approaches him, he winces in pain.
Hey, Red. Oh, you've lost a lot of blood.
This is nothing. You know they'll kill me, don't you?
Agents help Hellboy out.
Okay, Red, let's get you home. Come on.
Liz watches from the door of the hospital as Hellboy is led away. She and John's eyes meet for a moment before she turns and goes back inside. John glances back over to Broom. Back at the Bureau, Abe operates on Hellboy's injured arm as John and Broom look on.
You were burned by some organic acid.
I'm lucky that way.
Ow! I worry about you.
Me?
Broom looks over at Hellboy.
Well, I won't be around forever, you know.
Damn!
Could you please be a little careful?
Baby. How long was it latched onto you?
I don't know, about 5 seconds.
Professor, look.
Is it bad?
Touched you 5 seconds, laid 3 eggs.
Didn't even buy me a drink.
Abe removes a translucent egg from Hellboy's arm.
The stinger detaches itself from the tongue and injects the eggs. They are very sensitive to heat, light. They need a humid, dark environment to breed.
Did you ever lose track of him?
Well, let's see. There was that moment when I had the train on top of my head.
We can't risk it. Tomorrow you'll go back to the tracks with a group of agents. Search the whole place, top to bottom. Find those eggs, destroy them.
Later, John works on a computer. He pulls up an old front page of USA Today. Its headline is Tragic Explosion, Child Only Survivor, together with a picture of Liz as a child.
Elizabeth Sherman.
I don't like the term fire starter. I just don't. And pyrokinesis sounds like some psychosis or something. I don't know. Maybe that's right. Not being able to let go. Scary. I black out after each episode. Sometimes for hours. You hear about so-and-so who just lost control and just exploded. Well, they're lucky it isn't true. With me, it is.
As Liz lies asleep in her hospital room, an orderly looks in on her. Content that all is well, the orderly goes out. As soon as he's gone, Grigori emerges from the shadows and touches Liz's forehead.
My master is calling your name now. My girl, you must return to the child. So once again, dream of fire.
He kisses her forehead. When his lips touched her skin, a bright light shines out. In a dream, Liz is a child again. She walks beside some residential tower blocks and a gang of other children call over to her.
Hey, Freak! Get back here, Freak! Get
her! Liz runs to a fence and tries to get over it, but the other kids pelt her with stones. One hits her in the head, and blue flames burst out from her right hand.
Oh, no. Not again.
The blue flames engulf her. Suddenly, a huge ball of fire explodes out from her, incinerating the gang of kids and everything else. In her hospital room, Liz spontaneously combusts in a ball of blue flame. The room quickly becomes an inferno. Two orderlies sit at a desk in an office nearby. Suddenly, all of their security monitors fail, and a huge explosion erupts from Liz's room. A ball of fire sweeps down the corridor. The orderlies duck behind their desk as the fireball shatters the window of their office, then bursts out of the hospital windows in a fierce explosion. In the bureau, John wheels a trolley laden with pancakes and bacon into Hellboy's subterranean room. Hellboy talks with Broom as he files down his horns with a grinder.
How many buildings does she have to burn down? She belongs here.
That's not what she feels. She may never feel it. Her choice.
That girl you're talking about.
Hey, Boy Scout. Think twice.
No, listen, I read her file. She blames herself for that explosion in Pittsburgh. But I think I can help.
Bruton closes his eyes.
I could talk to her. I think I could bring her back.
Just what was it that landed you this job pushing pancakes, huh? What was it? Punctuality? The way you part your hair. What is your area of expertise?
Later, John talks to Broom and Abe.
He doesn't want me with him. I know that much.
You're doing fine.
No, I'm not. Look, he respects Clay, not me. I'm really sorry, okay? I'm not your guy.
I'm dying, Agent Myers.
John stops in his tracks.
Like any father, I worry about him.
John looks back at Broom.
In medieval stories, there is often a young knight who is inexperienced, but pure of heart.
Come on. Look, I am not pure of heart.
Yes, you are.
Rasputin is back for him. What I ask of you is to have the courage to stand by him when I'm gone. He's born a demon. Can't change that. But you will help him, in essence, to become a man.
John looks thoughtful. The fire brigade hose down the smouldering remains of the hospital. John pulls up on a taxi and surveys the ruins. Later, he talks with a doctor. Liz sits alone in the next room, a lonely figure on a solitary chair.
She was making great progress, and now this will be closed for months, and it put a big dent in our Thorazine supply. She's been like this since it happened. Are you sure you want to go in?
John goes into the next room. Liz sits staring vacantly into the distance as he walks up to her.
Miss Sherman, I'm Agent Myers, FBI.
She doesn't look round at him. He crouches beside her.
Miss Sherman?
She continues staring ahead.
Can I call you Liz? It's a beautiful name.
60% of all the women in the world are named Liz.
Well, it's impressive by my standards. My name's John. John T. Myers. Dr. Broom asked me to invite you back to the Bureau. No special precautions, no security escorts. Just you and me in a taxi like regular folks.
A subway train roars through a tunnel. Hellboy, Abe, Clay, and some other agents arrive on the Samael Echo. Hellboy pops on a cigar. Abe extends his webbed hand to sense the egg's location.
Over here.
You said those eggs needed dark and humid? Well, they hit the jackpot. The subway lines, they all converge right around here. Right below us is the old Vandeveer Reservoir. It was abandoned in the mid-30s.
There's a pulse.
He points to a wall.
There. A cistern on the other side.
Hellboy wanders over to the brick wall.
Most of the eggs are there.
There's no way in. We should go back and request a special permit, type 2.
Hellboy uses his oversized fist to smash a hole through the wall. Somewhere nearby, Cronin is adjusting one of his hands, which is mechanical. Hearing the noise, he looks up. Two pale grey bug eyes staring out of a black balaclava. Hellboy finishes smashing the hole and turns to the agents.
You guys coming or what?
Hellboy climbs through the hole he's just made. Cronin takes an envelope from a drawer and looks at the contents. He puts the envelope away in his pocket. Hellboy lifts a huge metal drain cover. Cockroaches pour out. Abe looks down into the water below and turns resignedly to Hellboy.
We lead a charmed life.
Hellboy activates two glow sticks and drops them into the water. They drift down into a large flooded room. A reborn Samael swims away from them. Abe removes his land-breathing equipment as he prepares to go into the flooded room. Hellboy holds out a pendant.
Here you are, Doctor. This should cover your tail, friend. Reliquary, straight from the Vatican.
Abe takes the pendant.
Bone from St. Dionysus. Looks like a
pinky.
Remind me why I keep doing this.
Rotten eggs and the safety of mankind.
Ah.
Abe takes the pendant and ties it around his wrist. He then switches his communicator on and dives into the water. He looks around to get his bearings and swims down deeper into the flooded room. He finds three Samael eggs floating in the room. He stops and catches them, putting them in a flask tied to his belt. Samael passes through the water somewhere behind Abe. He turns around. In the room above, Agent Clay adjusts his coiffure.
This doesn't really look like doll's hair. Be honest, Red. What do you think?
I'm thinking about doing it myself. Hey, you guys find anything or what?
No eggs yet, Red. What are you on a lunch break?
Nothing here.
Hellboy lights more glow sticks and throws them on the ground. Looking up, he sees Cronin standing in front of him. He pulls the Samaritan, and Cronin runs off.
Fred's on the move. I'll cover him.
Clay runs off after Hellboy, who chases Cronin down a network of dank, dark tunnels. Clay loses them.
Damn it, Red.
Cronin ducks under an arch and disappears. Hellboy runs past the arch and loops in through the next one. There's no sign of Cronin. He runs off down another tunnel. Not far away, Clay walks down a tunnel with his gun at the ready and passes close to Cronin, who's pressed up against a wall. Down in the flooded room, Abe finds a large heap of glowing Samael eggs, which look a bit like giant frog spawn. As Abe holds his hand out, the relic slips from around his wrist and falls to the ground. He reaches out to retrieve it, but it falls away through a hole in the floor. Abe straightens up and looks apprehensively at the pile of eggs. Samael swims up behind him, and he turns round. Samael slashes at Abe with his claws, and Abe swims away, dodging and weaving, as Samael snaps at his ankles. Abe slips between two pillars too narrow for Samael to pass through. The demon hammers at the pillars, then gives up his pursuit. Abe relaxes for a moment, only to have Samael approach from a different direction and extend his tongue at him. Abe shrinks away, and Samael roars his frustration. A second Samael cruises up beside the first, and they swim off. Abe leans back against a pillar and gasps, bubbles issuing from his mouth. One of the agent's communicators flashes.
Hey, it's Abe.
Two of the agents see two Samaels emerge from the flooded room.
Oh, God.
The first agent turns to the second.
Bring your toy over here.
The second walks over carrying a high-tech flamethrower. He switches the weapon on.
There's only one. I'll fry him quick. Two. There were two.
One of the Samaels shoots out its tongue and grabs the second agent. The first watches in horror as his colleague is eaten alive. He turns and runs as the second Samael comes after him, chasing him through the labyrinth of subterranean tunnels. He gets cut off by a subway train crossing a tunnel in front of him. The Samael pounces and rips him apart. Clay creeps along a corridor. He lowers his gun and gets on his radio.
Red? Red, come in, Red. What's your 20? I got no signal. Where the hell are you?
It's like Swiss cheese in here.
Sit tight, pal. I'm on him.
Samaritan at the ready, Hellboy walks into the room where Cronin had been working earlier. An array of respiratory masks and tools lie on the desk. Hellboy looks them over and holsters his gun. He picks up a book containing an old medieval print of Samael.
Samael, Arm of the Resurrection.
Didn't I kill you already?
The Samael jumps down off a raised level at Hellboy, and they tumble into an empty lift shaft. As they fall hundreds of feet, Samael and Hellboy trade blows.
You goddamn...
Down in a subway station, a police officer patrols along a walkway. Suddenly, Hellboy and Samael crash out of an air vent into the busy station. Samael hurls Hellboy across the concourse, and he crashes through some ticket barriers, coming to rest with his head hanging over the edge of a platform. He sees a train coming thundering towards him.
Oh, crap.
Samael swings a pincer at him, and Hellboy dodges both it and the train. He gets to his feet and swings a punch at Samael, but misses. Samael grabs him and throws him into a wall. Hellboy rips a phone from the wall and beats Samael with it.
It's for you! You shouldn't hurt people!
Samael grabs the phone, wrenches it from Hellboy's grasp and throws it aside. Samael swings his pincer at Hellboy, who dodges it. The pincer smashes into a pillar, taking a chunk of masonry away. Hellboy dusts his overcoat off and turns to Samael.
You missed!
Hellboy is about to take a swing at Samael when the pillar collapses, causing an office room it supported to fall, trapping Hellboy beneath it. Samael turns towards the terrified crowd and roars at them. Hellboy gets up out of the rubble, the back of his coat covered in broken glass.
Hey, junk face!
Samael turns back.
You can do better than that, big monster like you.
Hellboy bleeds from a cut above his right eye. He and Samael walk out to face each other. Hellboy plants a blow on Samael's head with his oversized fist, then gets a few more blows in until Samael knocks him to the floor, grabs hold of his ankle, and hurls him through a plate glass window up on a higher level. Hellboy slides backwards and crashes into a poster display which collapses around him as he falls onto his backside. Samael bends back a metal latticework gate and proceeds up the stairs to the upper level. Some debris falls from the ceiling and hits Hellboy on the head.
Oh.
Commuters greet from Samael as he walks up the stairs. Hellboy meets him at the top of the staircase. He shrugs his shoulders, ready for the fray. Hellboy picks up a box of kittens as Samael shoots out his tongue.
Second date.
Hellboy grabs it.
No tongue.
He tightens his grip on Samael's tongue and swings him around by it. Samael smashes through a window and clings to a wall beyond. He jumps down and clings to the roof of a tunnel beneath Hellboy, who clings onto his tongue. Hellboy, still clutching the box of kittens, is pulled by Samael to the edge of the window. As Samael tries to pull Hellboy into the tunnel, a train crashes into him, smashing him to bits. Hellboy slowly gets to his feet and examines his fist. He flexes his wrist and hands the box of kittens back to the woman.
Thank you.
He shrugs.
My job.
He strokes one of the kittens with an oversized finger. Down on the railway track, the remains of Samael disintegrate, and a ball of greenish light rises from them and splits in two. Down in the flooded room, the clutch of Samael eggs begin to hatch. Abe pulls himself out of the flooded room just as the water behind him boils with newly hatched Samaels. He hides behind a pillar as the creatures climb up out of the flooded room. He presses a button on the communicator on his belt. In another room, Clay sits alone. Cronin drops down from the roof of a tunnel nearby.
Clay, I'm getting a signal from Abe. I'm on my way back.
Clay spots Cronin and draws his gun.
Buddy, don't take another step.
Cronin turns the dial on his breastplate several times and Clay lets him have it. Where the bullets strike Cronin, sand pours out of the holes. Clay hurriedly reloads his pistol as Cronin examines the sand oozing from him. Cronin draws a blade and advances. He stabs Clay repeatedly in the abdomen. Clay shoots again. Hellboy hears the shots.
Clay.
Hellboy draws his gun and hurries off down a corridor. As Clay expires, Cronin withdraws his blade and Clay topples to the floor. Hearing Hellboy approach, Cronin lays his blade on the ground. He then lies on the ground beside Clay and turns the dial in his breastplate again. His body goes into spasm for a few seconds, then lies still. Hellboy runs into the chamber and holsters his gun. He bends down and feels Clay's neck for a pulse. He gets on his radio.
Man down, I need an ambulance right away. Do you read me? Hang in there, pal.
Man down! Do you read? Do you read?
Hellboy looks up, agitated.
Quarry Moss, do you read me? Quarry Moss, do you read me? Man down!
Back at the Bureau of Paranormal Research, Abe's condition is being monitored as he stands suspended in a flotation tank. Hellboy stands watching him. Manning lights a cigar.
He'll make it.
Manning puffs on his smoke.
Not everyone was so lucky. We had two agents die today. Clay probably won't survive the night.
Not now, man.
My problem
Please.
With you. You're reckless. These men trusted you to lead them as a team. Where were you?
Hellboy looks at Manning.
I knew those men better than you did.
Oh, I see. Well, that makes it all right.
No, it doesn't make it all right. But I stopped that thing, didn't I?
Yes, it did. That's what you do. That's why we need you. You have an insight. You know monsters.
Hellboy steps forward.
What are you trying to say?
This whole thing is a farce. Because in the end, after you've captured every freak out there, there's still one left. You.
Manning leans in close to Hellboy, who nods. Manning turns to go.
Hey, Manning, I wish I could be more gracious, but...
He grabs up a heavy piece of equipment. Manning cowers in front of him. Broom greets Liz and John.
Welcome back.
Liz and Broom hug.
It's only for the weekend, Professor Broom.
The piece of heavy equipment smashes through a window and Manning staggers out after it.
I want that thing locked up! Starting now! Right now! Do you... Now, you hear me?
Nothing's changed. Home sweet home.
Liz?
She picks her bag up and walks away.
Liz!
Hellboy grins at John.
You did it, buddy. You did it!
John walks away, leaving Hellboy alone.
Myers? Pop?
Later, John brings Hellboy two fast bowls of chili as he works on a letter to Liz. Hundreds of rejected attempts lie on the floor.
I'm gonna put these over here, okay?
One minute.
Hellboy screws up another letter.
Hey, Myers. You're a talker. What's a good word, a solid word for need?
Well, need's a good solid word.
Too needy.
Well, look, start in, okay? You got nachos coming.
Nachos.
Oh, my God. Look at them all.
The cats.
Who had babies, huh?
Liz.
There's something I need for you to hear, and it's...
Well, will it take long? So I'm actually going out.
Hellboy looks up.
Out? Out of?
Yeah. Yeah, for a cup of coffee, but go ahead, read.
Are you going alone?
No, Myers is taking me.
Hey, your chili's getting cold.
Not hungry.
Hellboy sits down.
Is there something you'd like me to hear?
It's just a list. It's not finished.
Okay, well then, later. See ya.
Liz wanders off.
Anything else you need?
Not from you.
Well, good night.
Goodbye.
Hellboy swigs from a tin of Red Bull and crushes the can as John goes out after Liz. In an autopsy room, Broom prepares to work on Cronin.
Subject, Karl Ruprecht Cronin. Born in Munich, 1897. Suffered from a masochistic compulsion, commonly known as surgical addiction.
Broom examines Cronin's heavily scarred right arm.
Both eyelids surgically removed.
He lifts a plastic sheet covering the corpse.
Along with his upper and lower lip.
He examines his mouth.
The blood in his veins dried up decades ago.
He pulls a device from his chest.
Only dust remains.
The mechanical device ticks slowly round and round.
What horrible will could keep such a creature as this alive?
He looks down at the corpse, then goes over to a table and looks through Cronin's effects. He finds the envelope and takes out the torn piece of paper inside and examines it. Outside, it's dark and John gets coffee at a stall. Liz is nearby playing with a camera.
And one of those cookies, yeah. Do you have any donuts?
Sorry, pal.
No, he's determined, unstoppable.
Some people would call that cocky.
He's just strong.
Yeah, that he is.
Yeah, I've got yours. My uncle, he used to say we like people for their qualities, but love them for their defects. He loves you, you know.
Liz nods thoughtfully.
What about you?
I don't know. I grew up with him. But now every time I see him, I get confused. There's hardly a day that goes by that he's not in my mind, even now. Feel like he's here.
Liz walks off.
Hey, wait up.
John goes after her. Hellboy leaps from one roof to a neighboring one. He looks down at John and Liz as they stroll down the street.
No sugar, thanks.
No cream and sugar, moron. She takes it black.
I got some milk here.
Oh, no, I'm okay.
Told you.
Liz takes John's photograph.
She took his picture.
Hellboy paces the rooftop.
She took his picture.
He turns round and shrugs.
She took his picture.
He shakes his head incredulously.
She took his picture.
He runs and leaps to the next roof, but falls slightly short.
Oh, crap!
He pulls himself up to the edge of the flat roof and dangles there as John and Liz walk by on the street below.
It's freezing, isn't it?
Coffee's warming me up.
Well, what do we do now, huh? New Jersey entertainment cat.
Hellboy pulls himself up and sees a boy looking at him.
You sound like a game show host.
Hey.
Hey!
He scrambles onto the rooftop.
You're Hellboy.
Shh.
I'm on a mission.
Hellboy goes over and looks down into the street at John and Liz. The boy follows him over.
Well, I lived with my uncle most of my life. Then I went to Quantico. I came top of my class. I'm not the one.
Don't tell anyone, huh?
The boy nods. Hellboy looks back at John and Liz.
Hellboy.
At the bureau, Broom sits in his study and examines the fragment of paper he found on Cronin with an illuminated computerized viewer. It scans the fragments and fills in the missing area.
Sebastian Glaskva, number 16, Moscow. Who wants us in Moscow?
In the autopsy room, Cronin's corpse lies motionless under its plastic sheet. Suddenly it sits up and gets off the slab. Cronin walks across the room, the plastic sheet falling from him. He goes over to the table, which has his effects on it. He picks up his mechanical left hand and connects it to his arm. He flexes the hand, then reinserts the mechanical device into his chest. He puts all his clothes on and winds the device in his chest, then spins one of his blades, finishing with a flourish. Back on the rooftop, the boy offers Hellboy some milk and cookies.
My mom baked them.
She's laughing. She's sitting on a park bench, and she's laughing. That's it. I'm done.
They don't look like spies.
Are you kidding me? Look at this guy. Those shady little eyes, that phony grin. Are you gonna eat that?
No.
Hellboy takes it.
Hey, he's yawning. He's bored.
Yeah, the old yawning trick.
Hellboy nudges the boy.
Watch his arm.
As he yawns, John stretches and casually places his arm round his shoulders. Hellboy picks up some stones.
If he wants my job, he wants my girl.
He tosses one stone aside, then selects one he likes the look of.
Hey, we all have a side that we try to hide.
A stone hits John on the side of the head. Grimacing in pain, he slowly gets to his feet, rubbing his head.
Hey, what the hell? Hey! Hey, who threw that?
He looks around, perplexed.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
The boy pats Hellboy's shoulder.
Nice shot.
In his study, Broom opens an old book and looks at a print of a bearded man.
Sebastian Glaskva, number 16. It's Rasputin's mausoleum.
Cronin walks slowly down a spiral staircase at the back of the study. Broom looks round and sees him.
I see the puppet. Where is the puppeteer?
Very good, Professor Broom.
Grigori sits nearby.
It was you. Scraps of paper. Liz's sudden relapse and return.
Breadcrumbs on the trail. Like in a fable. They both distract him. And guide him exactly where I need him.
Moscow.
His destiny. And the last clue will be left by the late Professor Broom. You raised the child, nurtured him. So in return, I will permit you a brief glimpse of the future.
Grigori puts his hand on Broom's forehead, and in his mind's eye, Broom sees a shattered world. A newspaper lies on the ground with the headline, The Apocalypse. Beyond it, a fully formed Hellboy broods over the mangled remains of a great city.
He will open the portal and bring about the end of the world. If only you had had him destroyed 60 years ago, none of this would have come to pass. But then, how could you have known? Your God chooses to remain silent. Mine lives within me. Every time I died and crossed over,
his flesh ripples.
Oh, the master came back with me. He disclosed to me the child's true name. Would you like to know it?
I know what to call him. I call him son.
Broom puts a rosary down on the old book he'd been reading.
I'm ready.
Grigori gives Broom's hand a squeeze and walks away. Cronin steps up behind Broom and puts his hand on the professor's shoulder. He draws one of his blades, levels it at the back of Broom's neck, then plunges it into him. He withdraws the blade, and Broom topples silently onto his side. Out on the rooftop, Hellboy sits with the boy and sips his glass of milk.
Just go there and tell her how you feel. My mom says that...
Look, it's not that easy, okay?
He glances at the boy.
Plus, you're 9. You're not old enough to be giving me advice.
The boy looks down into the street.
Who are those guys?
Hellboy looks round, then stands up as he sees some other FBI agents get out of a car and run over to Liz and John.
Something's wrong.
An agent uses a pair of tweezers to pick up Broom's rosary beads and puts them in an evidence bag. A set square is used to measure the position of some drops of blood on Broom's notes, and a photographer records the crime scene. Manning looks round as Hellboy strides into the room. Two agents leave Broom's body and Hellboy crouches down beside him. He gently pulls the professor up to a sitting position and cradles the body in his arms, resting his face against Broom's. On a pouring wet day, a sea of black umbrellas parts to allow Broom's coffin through. John and Manning are amongst the 6 pallbearers carrying the coffin. Liz, holding a black umbrella, watches as the back of a hearse is opened and the coffin loaded inside. Liz walks beside the hearse as the funeral cortege pulls away from under a covered walkway outside the bureau building. Hellboy stands on top of the walkway and looks down at the cortege. Liz looks up at him from under her umbrella. The rain runs down Hellboy's chiseled features and he holds Broom's rosary in his left hand. Later inside the bureau, Abe hangs upside down in his suspension tank, playing with a Rubik's Cube. Liz sits on the other side of the glass, chatting to him.
He hasn't spoken to anybody in 3 days. Not a word. He won't eat, he won't sleep. I've never seen him like this. Never. Should I stay? With him, I mean.
Listen. I'm not much of a problem solver.
The Rubik's Cube.
3 decades... I've only completed 2 sides. But I do know this much. If there's trouble, all us freaks have is each other. And I'm stuck here. So, take care of the big monkey for me, will you?
Liz smiles and Abe puts his webbed hand against the glass. Liz places her hand against it. Manning briefs John and the other agents.
Volokolomsk Fields, 50 miles from Moscow. That's where we're going. Sebastian plucks bar number 16. That's the only clue we have. We've collected and destroyed thousands of eggs, but we have no trace of this Samael or this Rasputin character. We leave as soon as we get clearance and equipment. Hellboy's coming. I'm not pleased about that, but I will be in charge this time. We either wrap this up or I'm closing this freak show for good.
John steps out of the meeting as he sees Liz walking down the corridor. He watches her go. Hellboy looks at the old book about Rasputin in Broom's study.
Hi.
Hi.
Bare-chested, he looks up from the book as Liz walks over to him.
I'll come to Moscow if you're still going.
I am. But I have something to say. I understand what you don't like about me. I do. What I am makes you feel a little out of place. Out there.
Red, I don't...
Listen.
Hellboy walks over to her.
I'm not like Myers. It makes you feel like you belong. Which is good, really.
Liz looks down. Hellboy gestures to his face.
I wish I could do something about this. I can't. I can promise you two things. One, I'll always look this good.
Liz smiles and shakes her head. Hellboy touches her face.
And two, I'll never give up on you. Ever.
She nods.
I like that.
Liz drops her gaze as he stares down at her. Later, they, John, Manning, and the other agents are aboard a C-10 transport plane over Russian airspace.
One falls, two shall arise. Samael. We'll have to nail them all at once. And the eggs.
When we do, no mumbo jumbo.
Grenades.
Double core, Vulcan 65. Grenades. Now, we've installed a handy little timer.
You said it. You walk away. Cable pulls the safety pin. Kaboom. Easy to clean, easy to use.
A convoy of trucks drives along a snowbound road in the Volokolamsk fields, Moscow. Liz gets on her radio.
Sparky to Big Red, do you read me? Come in.
He's in a crate on a lorry.
Sparky?
Who came up with that, Myers?
Yeah, we're leaving the main road, so hang on.
This better be the place or I'll puke.
Ow!
He bangs his head as the lorry jolts to a stop. Liz, Manning, and John open the crate.
You better come out and see.
Hellboy climbs out of the crate and joins the other agents in front of the main gates to a gigantic, snowbound graveyard. He looks up at the gates.
Sebastian Plakpa, number 16.
Hellboy walks through the gates and the others follow him into the city of the dead.
Forget it. We're never going to find Rasputin's mausoleum. Now, what we do here is we make up a grid. We go in by quadrants, maybe satellite photography.
Let me ask for directions.
Baffled, Manning watches as Hellboy walks off.
What'd he say?
Hellboy walks between the tombstones. After a moment, he stops and produces a small metal box from his pocket. He opens it.
Come on, baby. Find me a talker.
He walks over to a tomb and pulls away the slab covering it. He looks down into it for a moment, then jumps down into the grave, landing on a coffin. He pulls the coffin open, revealing a desiccated corpse with a noose around its neck.
Hi there.
He holds a talisman.
Animum vedere animus corpus.
He holds the talisman above the legless corpse's head. Suddenly, the corpse comes to life, coughing and spluttering. Hellboy recoils from its stale breath. It begins to sit up in its coffin.
Come on.
The corpse sits up and asks, "What do you want?" Manning.
This is ridiculous.
The agents huddle by a mausoleum.
I run this show, not him. This guy's nothing but trouble, nothing. Anybody got a power bar?
Hey, there he is.
60 feet further, comrades. And three rows in.
What the hell's that on his back?
This here is Ivan Klementovich. Say hi, Ivan.
Ivan says, "Go that way, red monkey."
Gotcha.
Liz smiles to herself. Hellboy, Ivan, and the agents approach a large mausoleum. One of the agents opens the doors and Hellboy steps inside. The agents follow him and Ivan inside.
Ivan says there's a whole network of tunnels down here. Goes on for miles.
They walk down a flight of stairs.
Stay close, everybody.
You better be right about this.
They emerge into a large circular room. Ivan looks round while Hellboy looks over at John.
We'll be all right as long as we don't separate.
Large metalwork partitions shoot up out of the floor, splitting the party into two groups. John gets trapped with Liz and some other agents, Manning with Hellboy, Ivan, and one other agent lying. Rows of spikes stick out of the metal partitions.
Hey, Sparky.
Tell everyone to turn their locator
belts on. Anybody sees anything?
I'll say Marco.
Polo.
Are you sure about this?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 2.
Don't worry, Boy Scout. She'll take care of you.
She's a tough one.
Liz smiles briefly and pats John's shoulder.
Hey, come on.
They head off down a tunnel. Hellboy heads off down another tunnel with Agent Lyme and Manning in tow. They emerge onto a large bridge over a subterranean void.
Ask your buddy how far this thing goes.
Hellboy looks over the side and leans on an ancient railing. It promptly gives way and tumbles into the void. A cauldron of bats flies up when it hits something. Hellboy turns to Ivan.
How you doing up there, Ivan?
He replies, if I had legs, I'd kick your ass. Hellboy turns to Lyme.
Would you mind holding this guy for a while? He is so negative.
As he hands Ivan to Lyme, a door closes behind them.
Hey! Hey! Hey!
Manning thumps ineffectually at the door. Hearing something, Hellboy looks round.
What the hell is that?
Hellboy walks out across the bridge. Somewhere in the void below, the cogs of a giant mechanism begin to whir into life.
Something big. Lyme, come with me.
No. Stay put!
Lyme stops and Manning pursues Hellboy.
Stop! You listen to me. Listen to me! I'm in charge. We're gonna go back. You can take that door apart.
Whatever it is, it's coming for us. Now we gotta move forward. But... let's go.
Stay put! And you! I am not afraid of you! I'm in charge! We go back!
A giant hammer smashes through the bridge behind Manning, knocking Lyme and Ivan into the void. As he falls, Ivan says, I was better off dead. Manning and Hellboy look over the broken edge of the bridge. Manning unconsciously places a restraining hand on Hellboy's chest. Hellboy sees the door at the far end of the bridge begin to close. He hurls Manning backwards up the bridge and through the door before it closes, then dives forward as the giant hammer smashes into the bridge again, knocking off another section. This goes back, knocking away more of the bridge, leaving Hellboy teetering on the edge. The bridge begins to crumble away, and he scrambles forward as it disintegrates beneath him. He rushes down what's left of the bridge and dives under the door just before it closes, pulling his tail in behind him. The hammer smashes away the remains of the bridge. Manning and Hellboy get to their feet and find themselves in a small, round room.
Music.
Hellboy pulls a Samaritan out of its holster and steps up to the mouth of a narrow corridor lined with spikes. In the room it leads to sits Cronin, listening to an old wind-up gramophone. Hellboy and Manning creep slowly down the tunnel, and Manning jabs his hand on one of the spikes.
Ouch!
Hitting him, Cronin looks up. Hellboy glares at Manning. When he turns back, Cronin has gone. Hellboy and Manning step out of the tunnel and look around. There's no sign of Cronin. Hellboy turns the gramophone off.
Hey.
Manning holds up his finger.
Really went deep.
Cronin steps out of the shadows and slashes at Manning, cutting his jacket sleeve.
Hey! Hey, what's wrong with you?
Cronin makes to stab Manning, but Hellboy intervenes, blocking the blow with his giant fist, which is made of solid stone. Manning cowers behind a chair as Hellboy blocks Cronin's blows. Cronin does a sidewipe and nicks the bridge of Hellboy's nose. Cronin crosses his blades defensively and Hellboy grabs them, pulls Cronin forward, and punches him repeatedly in the face with his stone fist.
You killed my father. Your ass is mine.
He winds up a massive punch which knocks Cronin backward, slamming him into the wall. He slumps down and begins to laugh.
What are you laughing at, you Nazi son of a...
The floor opens up beneath Hellboy and Manning, revealing a pit. Spikes rise up out of the floor. Manning clings to the side of the pit and climbs out, while Hellboy grabs a rope and dangles over the spikes. Cronin walks up to the side of the pit and flourishes his blades as he prepares to cut the rope. He stops when he gets hit in the head by a loose cog thrown by Manning.
Don't even think about it.
As Manning prepares to throw a second cog, Hellboy lassoes Cronin with the loose end of his rope, pulling him forward. Cronin digs his blades into the floor to brace himself as Hellboy scrabbles out of the pit. He then flips Cronin into it. Cronin falls and is impaled on the spikes. Hellboy prepares to throw a giant cog into the pit on top of him.
That's all for you, Pinhead.
Hellboy throws the giant cog in. Manning lobs his smaller one in for good measure. Hellboy tries to light a cigar with his zipper, but it won't spark.
What are you doing? Come on. You never light a cigar that way. You use a wooden match.
Manning strikes one for him.
Preserves the flavor, you see?
Hellboy puffs on the cigar as it lights. Manning blows the match out. Hellboy contemplates the flavor of the cigar and nods appreciatively, then turns to Manning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They both glance thoughtfully down into the pit. Liz, John, and the other agent, Stone, creep along a narrow tunnel.
So he thinks you and I... That's why he's mad at me.
As he walks along another tunnel, Hellboy hears their voices.
It's not true, right?
Hellboy stops and listens.
What?
Well, you know, you feel that way about me.
You want to know that here? Now?
Hellboy puts his ear to the floor.
Yeah.
Liz shakes her head.
Red, white, whatever. Guys are all the same.
She walks on, leaving John confused.
Hey, wait up!
Have you found him yet? I got him right below me. A matter of minutes.
Okay, good. Could you hurry up, because it's a little spooky in here.
Liz, wait.
John, Liz, and Stone walk into a waterlogged room.
Oh, my God.
Let's back out. Real slow.
Several Samaels are tending to a number of large clutches of eggs. The creatures slowly advance towards Liz, John, and Stone, and the door shuts behind them, locking them in. Stone takes off his belt of grenades and turns the timer knob.
Myers! Ready your grenades!
Marco, get your big red butt over here.
Liz looks up at the ceiling as bits of it start to fall in. Hellboy pounds on the floor of the tunnel he's in.
Prepare for you, kid!
The Samaels stop and look up as bits of masonry fall around them. Stone turns the dial on his grenade belt, and one of the Samaels pounces, knocking him across the room. Another of the beasts joins in the attack. Hellboy continues hammering away at the floor as John draws his gun and puts a couple of slugs into a Samael. The creature jumps forward, but stops as some of the ceiling caves in and Hellboy drops down. He pulls himself upright as more Samaels start to hatch out of the egg clutches. Hellboy turns to face the Samaels, and Liz looks on with concern as he launches himself at them. He wallops the creatures with his giant stone fist. One of the creatures leaps onto his back, and he hurls it away. More and more of the monstrous fiends join the fray, and Hellboy is in very real danger of being overwhelmed. Liz makes to go to him, but John pulls her back.
Liz, no!
They're gonna kill him! Do something!
For what? What do you want me to do?
Hit me!
What?
Hit me! No!
The Samaels have pulled Hellboy over and are savaging him in the shallow water. John slaps Liz across the face and blue flames burst from her left hand.
You should be running.
John takes the hint and runs across the chamber. He trips in the water, then scrambles behind a rock. The flames spread to Liz's right hand and up her legs, ultimately enveloping her entire body. As Hellboy struggles with the Samaels, Liz stands with her arms outstretched and unleashes a blast of blue fire which incinerates the Samaels around Hellboy and also their clutches of eggs. John keeps low behind the rock as the fire destroys everything. Later, sparks drift around the chamber in a breeze. J. John lies unconscious on the floor, the charred body of a Samael lying in front of him. As he wakes up, he opens his eyes and sees Grigori and Ilsa nearby.
They are all here. All.
Just as I was prophesied.
Grigori and Ilsa look round and see John.
This one's awake.
Ilsa steps over the fried Samael and looks down at John.
Thank you for this.
She takes one of the agent's grenade belts off her shoulder. In a derelict church open to the sky, Ilsa has John chained up and uses a heavy mallet to break the timing device on his grenade belt. John tries to extricate his hand from the manacles without success. Nearby, Hellboy is held in some stocks, which in turn are chained to the ground. He wakes up and tugs at his bindings, but is unable to free himself. An unconscious Liz lies on a stone altar. Grigori reads from a book in front of her.
And I looked, and beheld an angel, and in his right hand, the key to the bottomless pit.
He turns to look at Hellboy.
These were the words I heard as a peasant boy in Tobolsk. And now, the door, sent by the Ogdo Jahar, so that they might at long last enter our world.
You are the key, the right hand of doom. Your stone hand, what did you think it was made for?
Open the locks.
Don't do it, Red! Don't do it!
Ilsa whacks John with the mallet.
Silence!
Hellboy slumps down.
Imagine it. An Eden. For you and her.
No.
No.
Hellboy looks up at Grigori.
In exchange for her soul, then.
Grigori looks up at the full moon which beams down through the broken roof.
Open the door. Now. As you wish.
Grigori reaches for Liz.
No! 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 No!
Grigori holds Liz's head in his hands and brings his face close to hers. A blue light passes from her mouth to his as he quite literally sucks the life out of her. Hellboy struggles with the stocks but is unable to free himself. Liz's head rolls limply to one side as Grigori releases his grasp. Hellboy falls to his knees, and Grigori walks over to him.
Her soul awaits on the other side. If you want her back, open the door and claim her.
Grigori grabs hold of the stocks.
Your true name is inscribed around the locks that hold you. You cannot break them, no matter how strong you are.
The eclipse has begun.
A shadow creeps across the face of the moon.
Your true name.
Say it!
Hellboy stares up at Grigori, who pulls Broom's rosary from Hellboy's grasp and holds it in front of him.
Become the key.
He tosses the rosary aside and it lands in the snow near John, who looks down at it. Hellboy sags in the stocks.
For her.
Anung Unrama. Repeat it.
Anung Unrama.
The metal bindings on the stocks break and fall apart, releasing Hellboy. As he stands up, the markings on his skin glow red, as do his horns. Ilsa looks up at the sky and watches as the eclipse creeps across the face of the moon. Hellboy rolls his head as his horns begin to grow and flames burn above his head like a fiery crown. He looks at the glowing markings on his arm, then raises his face to the sky and exhales a cloud of red, vaporous breath. Grigori, John, and Ilsa watch as Hellboy strides over to a large block of stone standing nearby. Hellboy glances over at Liz on the altar, then up at the block of stone. He places his massive stone hand into the receptacle in the block and turns it. He looks up and growls as light courses through the runic symbols on the block, and then a shaft of bright light leaps up from the end of the block, blasts through the clouds and hits the moon, illuminating it with a fiery glow. Deep in space, the crystal shell holding Ogdru Jahad glows orange and shatters, releasing the entity. The dreadful being unfurls itself in a flurry of tentacles like some intergalactic giant squid. John manages to slip his bloodied left hand out of its manacle, and wary of attracting Ilsa's attention, reaches out for the rosary on the ground nearby. Ilsa is too busy watching Hellboy to notice. The octopus-like Ogdru Jahad makes its way towards Earth, following the shaft of light. John manages to get hold of the rosary. He holds it up and looks at it as Hellboy inserts his hand into a second aperture in the stone.
Open the final lock.
Remember who you are!
Hellboy removes his hand from the stone and looks round at John. John throws the rosary to Hellboy, who catches it. The crucifix burns into his palm and he drops it. As he examines the mark it left, Ilsa goes to hit John, but he kicks her feet from under her, then kicks her in the face, knocking her out.
Believe me, I lived long enough to know. Not a tear will be shed for this world.
You have a choice. Your father gave you that.
No, you don't! Open it!
Hellboy stares at his palm.
Do it!
Hellboy grabs hold of the horns on his head and rips them off. Gregor is aghast.
No. No!
As Hellboy looks up, the flames above his head die away, and the beam of light from the stone flickers and goes out. The tentacles of Ogdru Jahad melt away into the clouds, and the flames enveloping the moon die away.
What have you done?
Hellboy stabs Grigori.
I chose.
He's plunged one of his broken horns into Grigori's guts. He pulls the horn out and Grigori collapses on the ground. Hellboy throws down the horns and walks over to Liz on the altar.
You will never fulfill your destiny. You will never understand the power inside you.
I'll just have to find a way to live with that.
He picks Liz up off the altar. As he walks away, John joins him.
Child, look what you've done. You've killed me. An insignificant man. But you have brought forth a god.
Grigori goes into spasm, and a black, multi-tentacled, squid-like creature bursts out of his stomach.
Myers, let's go.
John and Hellboy walk off as the creature flops out of Grigori's abdomen onto the floor. Ilsa gets up and walks over to the dying Grigori as he sits back against the stones. The tentacled beast writhes on the floor before them and begins to grow rapidly.
Hell will hold no surprises for us.
Ilsa leans forward and kisses Grigori until the shadow of the now enormous creature falls upon them. Ilsa looks up and the beast crushes them with a blow from one of its tentacles. Hellboy puts Liz down in a corridor.
I took a grenade belt. The damn thing's broken.
Hellboy looks down at Liz and touches her face.
Keep her safe, will you? Whatever happens, don't leave her alone.
I won't.
Hellboy takes a last look at Liz and gets to his feet. He turns to John.
You're okay, Myers. Stick around.
Hey, Red.
Hellboy looks back and John tosses him the grenade belt.
Just pull a cable.
I didn't get you anything.
Are you gonna be okay? Alone?
Hellboy shoulders the grenade belt.
How big can it be?
A massive tentacle snakes up the corridor and grabs Hellboy. It drags him back into the derelict church and he drops the grenade belt. The beast is now about 100 feet tall and it hurls Hellboy high into the air. As he falls back earthward, the creature grabs him in another of its tentacles, smashes him into a wall, then slams him into the floor. He pushes himself up.
Damn.
He looks around and spots the grenade belt lying on some steps. He gets to his feet and looks up at the creature which towers over him, then grabs a sword from a nearby statue and hacks his way through the beast's writhing tentacles as he makes his way over to the steps and to the grenade belt. Each time he severs a tentacle, blue gun spurts out of the wound. Hellboy picks up the grenade belt, and as he does so, his sword becomes trapped in one of the tentacles. Another one wraps around him and lifts him up. The creature lobs Hellboy into the air and catches him with another tentacle. Then the beast carries him towards its mouth, which is ringed by a frond of smaller tentacles.
Oh, this is gonna hurt.
Dangling upside down in the beast's grip, he reaches down and pulls the pins from the grenades. The creature shoots out its mandibles and swallows Hellboy, grenade belt, and all. Suddenly, the creature is racked by a series of violent internal explosions, the last quite literally blowing it apart. Hellboy is thrown across the church and lands on the ground in a mishmash of the beast's guts and blue goo blood. He pulls himself up to a kneeling position.
Gonna be sore in the morning.
He gets up and walks out of the church, leaving the quivering remains of the beast steaming in the night air. John crouches beside Liz and feels her neck for a pulse. Hellboy walks up to him, carrying the tattered remains of his coat in his left hand. Concerned, John looks up at him.
She's got no pulse. She's not breathing.
Hellboy drops his coat and kneels down beside Liz. He gently holds her head in his left hand and leans in close to her. He whispers in her ear. John watches as Hellboy pulls away from Liz and her head lolls limply to one side. Liz heaves a breath and wakes. She looks up and sees Hellboy smiling down at her. He stands up and offers her his hand. She takes it and he helps her up. They embrace. John looks on as the couple hold each other tight.
In the dark, I heard your voice.
Hellboy presses his face to the side of her head.
What did you say?
I said, hey, you on the other side. Let her go. Because
she regards him expectantly, and he looks up for a moment, then back at her. She closes her eyes.
For her, I'll cross over. And then you'll be sorry.
Liz smiles up at him, and he grins back. Slowly, she raises her lips to his, and they kiss. As their lips touch, they're both engulfed in blue flames. John smiles to himself and looks down wistfully.
What makes a man a man? A friend of mine once wondered. Is it his origins? The way he comes to life? I don't think so. It's the choices he makes. Not how he starts things, but how he decides to end them.
Liz and Hellboy continue their fiery embrace. The picture fades to black. ITFC audio description by John Wolskill was read by James O'Hara. Directed by Guillermo del Toro. Screenplay by Guillermo del Toro. Screen story by Guillermo del Toro and Peter Briggs. Based upon the Dark Horse comic created by Mike Mignola. Produced by Lawrence Gordon, Mike Richardson, Lloyd Levin. Director of photography, Guillermo Navarro, ASC. Production designer Stephen Scott, edited by Peter Amundsen. Music by Marco Beltran. Executive producer Patrick Palmer. Co-executive producer Mike Mignola. Ron Perlman. Selma Blair. Jeffrey Tambor. Carl Roden. Rupert Evans. Brian Steele, Doug Jones. And John Hurt. Casting by Jeremy Zimmerman. Hellboy makeup consultant Rick Baker. Costume designer Wendy Partridge. Revolution Studios presents a Lawrence Gordon Lloyd Levin production in association with Dark Horse Entertainment. A film by Guillermo del Toro. A worried-looking Manning is still alone in the room with the pit of spikes. He gets on his communicator.
Hey, guys. I'm still here. Hello?
Unit Production Manager Patrick Palmer. First Assistant Director J. Michael Haney. Production Manager Dieter Moore-Struel. Second Assistant Director Mark Taylor. Visual Consultant Mike Mignola. Visual Effects Supervisor Edward Irastorza. Cast: Hellboy Ron Perlman. Trevor Broom Bruttenholm, John Hurt. Liz Sherman, Selma Blair. John Myers, Rupert Evans. Grigori, Carol Roden. Tom Manning, Jeffrey Tambor. Abe Sapien, Doug Jones. Samael, Brian Steele. Cronin, Ladislav Baron. Ilsa, Bridget Hodson. Agent Clay, John William Johnson. Young Broom, Kevin Trainer. Agent Lime, Brian Cart. Agent Moss, James Babson. Agent Quarry, Stephen Fisher. Agent Stone, Garth Cooper. Sergeant Whitman, Angus McInnes. Corporal Macklin, Jim Howick. Truck driver, Mark Taylor. Kids, Daniel Arsman, Bettina Ask, Alvaro Navarro, Emilio Navarro. Kid on rooftop, Rory Copus. Dr. Jenkins, Tara Hugo. Second Doctor, Richard Haas. Dr. Marsh, Andrea Mittner. Downs patient, Joe Eastwood. Museum guards, Charles Grisham, Jan Holosek. Lobby guard, Jeremy Zimmerman. Orderly, Monty Simons. Sherpa guide, Pavel Casual. Girl with kittens, Andrea Stewart. Von Crooked, William Hoyland. Young Liz, Millie Wilkie. Television host, Bob Sherman. Blonde television reporter, Ellen Savaria. German scientists, Petra Sekanina, Alice Kosner. Young guy, Justin Svoboda. Girlfriend, Winter Avizoli. Train driver, Santiago Segura, Albert May. Stunt coordinators, Monty Simons. Fight choreography, Jeff Ward, Thomas Elliott, Ladislav Baron, Guillermo del Toro. Hellboy stunt doubles, Jimmy Hart, Todd Bryant, Jan Petrina. Soundtrack on Varez Saraband. Music, Easy Come, Easy Go, written by Edward Heyman and John Green. Performed by Johnny Crawford, courtesy of Centropolis Records. Heart Attack and Vine, written and performed by Tom Waits, courtesy of Elektra Entertainment Group, by arrangement with Warner Strategic Marketing. Red Right Hand, written by Nick Cave, Thomas Weidler and Mick Harvey, produced by R. Walt Vincent and Pete Yorn, performed by Pete Yorn, courtesy of Columbia Records. Breathe In, written by James Grandler, performed by Palo Alto, courtesy of American Recordings LLC and the Island Def Jam Music Group, under license from Universal Music Enterprises. Let's Stay Together, written by Al Green, Al Jackson Jr. and Willie Mitchell, performed by Al Green, courtesy of HI Records, under license from EMI Film and Television Music. We'll Meet Again, written by Ross Parker and Hugh Charles, performed by Vera Lynn, courtesy of EMI Records, under license from EMI Film and Television Music. Music supervision by Peter Afterman and Margaret Yen. Music editors Chris McGeary, Dan DePrima. assistant music editor Rick Stewart. Orchestrated and conducted by Pete Anthony. Scoring mixer, John Kurlander. Assistant engineer, Dan Michael Thompson. Recordist and digital editor, Andre Spears. Stage assistants, Judy Kirshner, Evan Sanchez. Technical assistant, Clayton Wood. Score produced by Marco Beltrami, Buck Sanders. Score recorded and mixed at Skywalker Sound, a Lucasfilm Limited company, Marin County, California. Theremin performed by Robbie Virus. Supervising sound editors Robert Shoup, Frank Ulner. Sound designer Steve Burdecker. Supervising sound mixers Gary A. Rizzo, Michael Shimanek. Additional sound mixer Kent Sparling. Sound effects editors Tim Nielsen, Shannon Mills, Addison Teague, Christopher Scarabosio. Dialogue editors Marshall Wynn, Richard Quinn. ADR editor Michael Silvers. Foley editors James Lakowski, Michael Axon. First assistant sound editor Lisa Chino. Assistant ADR editor Steve Slannon. Assistant sound effects editor Dee Selby. Assistant dialogue editor Jessica Belfort Rankin. Mix technicians Jürgen Scharpf, Juan Peralta, Brandon Proctor. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character or history of any person is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture photoplay is protected pursuant to the provisions of the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication and or distribution of this photoplay may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Released by Columbia Pictures, a Sony Pictures Entertainment Company.